Greetings. I am Shisada Akona Kamara, and welcome to Satsang with the Shambhala Center. You are beginningless. You are endless. You are divine. Good evening, everybody. This is Shisada Akona Kamara. Welcome to Satsang on BBS. We're so pleased to have you with us again tonight. Let's go ahead and get started. Take a nice deep breath and I will clear the space. Mother, Father, God that I am, through the great central sun hierarchy, through the office of the Christ, and the order of Melchizedek, I call upon Archangel Michael to bring the sapphire blue ray. Cut away, cut away, cut away anything in all of our four lower vehicles not emanating directly from our I Am presence. I now call on Archangel Zachiel, keeper of the violet flame. Blaze, blaze, blaze the violet flame through all of our four lower bodies. Transmute, transmute, transmute all the psychic debris Michael has cut free. I now bring forth the invincible ring pass knot in the mirror blue light of invisibility to completely surround each of us. And I call forth a shaft of pure Christ light, one to surround each one of us, and I ask that they be brought to the center of the earth, where I call on our beloved Archangel Gabriel to seal them. And I ask that the legions of Michael completely surround each tube of light. And now I ask that our vibrations be raised high above the psychic and astral worlds to the highest realm of illumined truth we each can attain at this time. And now, Mother, Father, God, we place ourselves in service to you and to humanity, and I place myself in your service tonight. We ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted into our perceptions and that all else of the lower mind be kept out. And we ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted through us. And because we have asked this, we consider it so. So be it. Come back to me. We just had a crazy meditation after at the end of our session in Charlotte, and I am half not even here right now, so bear with me. I may need help. PLAN, you may do some talking tonight. We'll see. Okay. What's the name of that singer? Put your mic down.
Always forget. Hathaway, I think, is what we said. Is that what we said, Tim?
Hathaway, yes.
Hathaway.
That's how I started our Charlotte session tonight. In the words of the great master, Hathaway, what is love? Baby, don't hurt me. Baby, don't hurt me. No more. It's a song, yeah. We were looking at love tonight, the concept of love, the human concept of love, which is not love. It's anything but. Human love is predicated on behavior. If there's one thing you take away from this session tonight, let it be that. You can just turn it off now. Oh, we could be done. Just like that. But I'm serious. If there's one thing that I could leave you with that would leave an indelible impression upon your consciousness tonight, it would be that. Human love is predicated on behavior. Now, I want you to take this sentence and I want you to look at your life and I want you to see how that's true. It's always easiest to see how it's true with others. And of course, as with anything with this work, it's most difficult to see where it's true for us. But how many times, on a daily basis even, do you experience something where someone does something that is in opposition to a belief you hold or a desire you hold or a need that you are hoping to fill? And in that moment when that happens, judgment comes in and you hold them separate from you. And in doing so, you withhold your love from them. How many times a day? To people you love? To people you don't even know? To things that aren't even people? To things that aren't even people. All the time. Now, it's easy to see where someone else treats others from that space. That's, of course, easy to see. And it's very easy to see how people in our lives treat us from that space, right? Well, you have this, you know, you want me to be in a certain way. So whenever you see I'm not lining up with how you want me to be, you pull away from me. How many people have experienced that? Everybody has experienced that. Now, the job you've got right now is to find where you're doing that to others and to stop. Now, is that an easy thing to do? Well, no, of course not. If it was easy, I wouldn't have to talk about it. The mind is going to come in the moment where you recognize, where the observer can witness what's happening, and then this aspect of you can recognize, oh my gosh, I'm doing it right now. That's what she was talking about. Now mind jumps in. It goes, yeah, but. And fill in the blank with however many things you want to fill it with. Yeah, but. She doesn't understand me. Yeah, but. He only has a piece of the picture. He doesn't have the whole thing. And so we'll allow the yeah buts to come in and to justify the withhold of the love. That is not the walk of a spiritual seeker who's desiring becoming a spiritual adept. The adept is the one who's walking that path, not wanting it. They're walking it. Seeing the changes in their life because they're walking the understandings out before they're even theirs. Remember, it's only a mental or intellectual understanding until you have the life experience that The life experience will bring you the thing that's necessary for you to function from your knowing. That is innate to your beingness. I have to be careful how I word that because that's actually very important. Knowing isn't something that you take on. It's something that you uncover because it's kind of like buried treasure. You know, you may step over it for thousands of years, but it hasn't gone anywhere. It's still sitting there. And at some point, someone unearths it and it seems like a new discovery, but it's always been there. Well, knowing with a capital K is that. Love with a capital L is that. Light with a capital L is that. You know, it is innate to your beingness. So you aren't here to learn to love. You're here to remember how to love. You're not here to learn to be different. You're here to remember who you are. And in doing so, you will be different. And we'll come back again to the
statement I make all the time, that we aren't here to change anything. We're here to see through it. And I say that, you know, I mean, I have students here. I have a Linda's with us tonight, as she always is. And tonight's our anniversary. She's so sweet. She brought me flowers tonight because it's 5 years to the day where we had our first meeting where she decided to do this work. And how many times, Linda, in our 5 years together, have you heard me utter the statement, we're not here to change anything, we're here to see through it? 1,000? More? You'd like to say, well, geez, you know, kind of once you've heard it, you've heard it. I got it already. No, you don't. That's the beauty of so many things that I say. I don't say them because you're stupid and you need to hear them over and over. I say them because there's a resonance to it. See, when I speak something like that, the truth, capital T, that is under it, behind it, around it, pushing through it, makes an impact on your consciousness. And every time that I utter it, it makes a different impact. It hits a different level. That's why it's so important, some of these things that I say them over and over and over. At some point, you're going to hear it and you'll have the experience that I have had and that everyone will have if they haven't already, which is to have me say something and you have the experience of, oh my gosh, I see that on a completely different level right now. Why didn't I ever see that before? It's an amazing piece of your journey. You know, amazing. So the whole point, I had a discussion with a student yesterday around kind of how we, in my world, you know, it's very like people say, well, what do you do? And it's very simple, not easy to put into words, but I mean, at a very basic level, what do? Well, we dissolve the personal self. And the conversation I had yesterday pointed to the fact that there was a certain person who heard that and it, you know, scared the bejesus out of him. The concept of dissolving the personal self is pretty scary. You know, if you take it on a level where you don't understand what that means, well, why would I want to do that? Like, I like me, you know, why would I want to do that? And it's true. That would be scary. However, that's exactly what happens. On a more like benevolent note, what we do, which is equally true, is help to guide you to live from the space of your heart. And it is that simple. It's that simple. In doing so, the personal self dissolves. So whichever side you feel more comfortable with, I want to know that I'm dissolving out the personal self, or I just want to know that I'm, you know, moving back into the space of my heart. You can look at it either way, you know, whatever gets you through the night, right? I was always a big fan of the, you know, dissolve it out. Bust down those walls. Let's just do it. But I understand it can be scary. So if you're listening for the first time tonight, before you go running and screaming for the hills, recognize that truly that's all we're here to do. That's my job here, you know, as unorthodox as I am to a lot of people who experience me as unconventional as I am as a guide, you know, I can help. I can absolutely help you begin to move into your heart in a way that you didn't even recognize was possible before. And I say that because for most people, barring mothers with children, and I'll take that back, mothers who want their children. You find that funny, huh? Well, I say that because a mother who doesn't want that child is not going to have the same experience when she gives birth to it. But other than that, most people go through their entire life cycle without experiencing true unconditional love. Now, it's not to say there's something wrong with you. It's not to say that, you know, wow, you've really messed up, blah, blah, blah. No. It's innocent. It's so innocent. You're born into
the patterning that keeps you in a space where you can't live in your heart. Because the patterning isn't in the heart, you see. The patterning is the constriction around the heart that keeps you from experiencing who you actually are. Now, of course, the who you actually are hasn't gone anywhere. It's just waiting. Kind of like the buried treasure waiting under the sand for someone to discover it. You know, the you that is the divinity within your heart is just waiting for the moment where consciousness kind of wakes up. Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. And every time my students have these moments of, oh, my gosh, it's always the same thing. I can't believe I didn't see that before. It's so simple. I've said those words time and time again. With every new revelation, it's always the same. It's so simple. How did I never see that before? And so my students say that to me, and the answer is always the same. It's because you couldn't. No fault of your own. You were blinded to it. You couldn't see it. And that's the reality. So the reality in the world, when we look at human love is predicated on behavior, the reality of the world is you've got, you know, 7.5 billion people walking around on the planet, none of them capable of functioning from within their heart space. And yet we're all blaming each other for not doing it. Well, that's a little messed up, isn't it? You know, and the thing in it is that the hypocrisy, and you hear me speak about hypocrisy because it's all pervasive here. You don't see your own hypocrisy. Oh, I work so hard to be a loving wife, and then my husband comes home and he does blah, blah, blah. And then next thing you know, you're ripping him a new one. You don't show me you love me. In the middle of it, I'm sorry, are you showing him you love him? No. Wow, really? You ever step back and look at your own behavior? Do you? You need to. The whole world's your own projection. Where are you going to start? Blame them out there. It's all you. You could start out there. That's fine, as long as you recognize that out there is actually in here and there is no difference. So anything you feel like slapping your judgment on, you might as well recognize that you're just looking at yourself. And remember, paradoxically, yes, you're looking at yourself, meaning the self that you believe yourself to be. However, in highest truth, that is not who you are. It never has been. It never will be. But there's this interesting dance that has to happen. This is one of the fundamental questions that comes up with students. And of course, it's to be expected. Is the thing of, well, it doesn't make sense, though. You're telling me, on the one hand, that none of this is real and that in truth, you know, we're still where we've always been. We're divine. We exist and have live and breathe and have our being within God. God lives and breathes and has its being through us, you know. But then you're also telling me that I've got to get in, I got to look at all the things that bother me, and I got to, and as if it's real. And the answer is yes. Until it's not. And this is a tricky thing. See, the mind, you have to remember, the mind is a very black and white kind of a program. It's this or that. Mind has a very difficult time saying this and that. Very difficult. You have to be functioning from a pretty high level of consciousness to be able to work in the gray, because most people are not capable of that. That's why they can't see their own hypocrisy. They can't live in the gray area. And when you don't live in the gray area, you don't see your own hypocrisy. So, you know, as I say, you're here until you're not. So it's the same thing when it comes to dissolution work. You are the personal self working to dissolve the program of the personal self. You are that until you're not. And there does come a point at which the work that I teach people to do, very specifically, there does come up, there is an ending point to that work. You see, there has to be. You see, it's conceptual. So the work that we do, as powerful as it is, it's still conceptual, and it will take you very, very, very far, right? We tell people when we're talking about the work that we do, that we are, if you look at all of the spiritual understandings on the planet, okay, what I can offer you is the point of the arrow of those understandings. That's what I can offer you. There's no pride attached to that. There's no blowing my own horn attached to that. Nothing other than it's a fact. That's what I can offer you. However, even the means that we use to introduce those understandings to you and then have you work with them in order to actualize them in your own life, which is what you're doing as a seeker, actualizing the understandings. What does that mean? That means you've actually integrated them into your consciousness, and now you're living them as part of your beingness. That's what it is to actualize an understanding, where you don't have to think about it in order to do it. It's a natural beingness now. See? I forgot where I was going with that. I just hit the void. You come on, Pielian. Help me out here. Don't laugh at me. Help me.
All right, how far back are we going? Because you kind of keep doing this the entire night so far.
No, right before I did whatever I just said. I don't even know what that was. So whatever that was, it was right before it. I was on there was a train I was moving on.
Well, you were, okay, all right. So then you were going, you were telling everybody to take a step back and look at your own behavior. The world's your projection. Is that good? We don't see our own hypocrisy.
I'm just laughing because I can hear all the people out there going, she's the teacher. She's the teacher. Really? Oh my gosh, hysterical. So when mind isn't present... This is what happens. When I engage the intellect, there's nothing there. Okay. So the seekers always come back to that question. Aha. Yeah. That's what I was saying. The seekers always come back to the question of, if it's not real, why do I have to do the work, basically? Right. Okay. And you are there until you're not. Yes, that's it. So that's why. One of these days, we're going to start laughing and we won't stop. It's just going to happen. I hope you're all present for that. We can do laughter yoga for half an hour on air. Okay. Okay. So why, as a guide or as a teacher or whatever the heck you label you feel like planning on me, why am I so different? And it's not just me. My guide would say the same thing about her. Why? Why do you do this the way you do this? And why do you do that? And I don't understand. You just told me this, but you're doing the opposite. And it doesn't make any sense. And you contradict yourself all the time. And you speak in riddles. And I just can't. It doesn't make any sense. Well, of course it doesn't make any sense. Where are you viewing me from? Where are you viewing me from? The personal self is viewing this movement of the capital S self that sits here as Shusada, and it can't make heads or tails out of it. Well, of course it can't. If it could, it wouldn't be the personal self. You get it? It wouldn't be the personal self. If the personal self was capable of making the leap, it would understand me. You see? It's very simple. It's a very rational, logical thing that I'm showing you. What's so funny? You should be laughing at me tonight.
Because you just explain like this whole paradoxical thing. And you're like, do you see, it's very simple. And I'm thinking, probably not. People don't really see that. Like, it's still so hard to grasp.
It is. I know. And the it's so simple part comes from the fact that it is incredibly simple when viewed from where I sit. That's why I was saying earlier, all those moments that you experience as revelation, they're not revelation, you know. They're not. Again, I've talked to you all about this before. You got your head's not on straight. And you got to get it on straight. So all the things that you think of in the world as, oh, I had a moment of revelation. No. You had a moment of remembrance. There's nothing out there that's new that you need to learn. There's nothing out there that's, you know, new that you have to figure out how to become. Being, there's a Sai Baba quote that I just adore. He says, life is lost in dreaming. Being is lost in becoming. Okay, I take that back about the statement about human love. Keep the Sai Baba quote. It's priceless. Life is lost in dreaming. Being is lost in becoming. Oh, that's profound. And you couldn't speak it any more succinctly and beautifully than that. Because in the state of dreaming that the personal self is in, there is no life. You aren't living your life. What you think is you is a program that's going through the motions of the program. That's it. Wake up and you'll live a life with conscious choice. Being is lost in becoming. Yes. As long as there's something to become, I can't experience just being. Linda, do you see why I pushed back when you texted me? That's it. It's right there. As long as you're going to hold on to any piece of the story, the opportunity to be clear of it can't come, right? So Linda, my longest standing student, came to me this week through text. She'd been experiencing some energies and the personal story was running. And she had asked me kind of basically, could I help her? And I said, what do you need help with? She said, well, I see it all. I see the pattern. I see the story. I'm like, well, what do you need help with? If you see it, what do you need help with? And then I pushed back when she came back with more stuff, all based on the story of Linda. And she says, well, obviously, I need to process this more. I need to work it more. And I'm like, why? She said, well, I obviously haven't gotten it all. I'm like, well, what makes you think that? And I'm pushing. What makes you think that? Well, what would make you think that? Well, because it's present. So what? Ignore it. What if I told you it's as simple as that? What if I told you it's as simple as that? You've seen it all. You've already seen it all. I've watched you. But there's something that takes place in the seeker where once it's all seen, now there's this aspect that has to come in. So whenever that story wants to run, the aspect goes, stop. That may be a story, but it doesn't mean it's my story. And even if I used to think it was my story, that was never true. And I'm sure as heck not going to function from it right now. You see? And it's that simple. It's called walking yourself out of the illusion. That's what you're here to do. You'll trip and you're going to fall and you're going to go back in and spiral. And you're here, and I'm here as your guide to get you to a place where you can walk yourself out. Now, what happens? Linda comes to me. Can you help me? Oh, why do you need help? See, if I said yes, what did I just do? I just reinforced her story that she's the victim and she needs help. Now, up until now, I would have helped her. Why? Because where she was at, she required help. You see? But it's time for her to step up her game on her journey home to the place she never left. Time for her to step up her game. So I can't coddle her anymore. She's not going to get that from me. And if she keeps pushing at me, I might just stop answering her texts. So she's left with herself. What are you going to do? Oh my gosh, what do you do when nobody's there on the other end? Don't stick your tongue out at me. I love you, Linda. But this is it. You're here until you're not, you see. So even me as a guide, you have to understand, this is an art form, what I'm doing. I have to function with every individualized consciousness based on where you're functioning from. There's no blanket teaching out there for you guys. How can I do that? What's true for you won't be true for him. And if I tell him the same thing I'm telling you, he's going to get all kinds of extra screwed up. You see? That's the challenge of my work. It's not like, that's why I don't have thousands of people sitting in front of me. You can't work that way. What I can do is I can give you some of the basics that are solid. And you will carry them with you right through because they're good. And I started tonight's show with one. Human love is predicated on behavior. That's huge. And you will keep coming back to that over and over and over again. And you'll see it clearer and clearer and clearer until the point comes where it's so clear that you don't do it anymore. Not because you are mentally telling yourself not to do it anymore, but because it's not even in your nature to do it anymore. There will come a point for all of you, should you so desire and have the commitment necessary, there will come a point for all of you where it won't matter what that person on the other side of whatever the thing is, will never draw anything but love from you. Now that, don't get me wrong, that does not mean that you're never going to disagree with anybody. It does not mean you're never going to have words with somebody. It doesn't mean any of that, other than in the moment of confrontation between, you know, two opposing views, which is always going to happen here. Wake up. This is a polarized reality. It's not going to change. There's always going to be opposing views, right? In the moment of opposition, you never lose sight of who you are talking to. It's God. Always, 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 always. And not God out there, because the God out there is the God within. Indistinguishable. God's undifferentiated. That's what you are. Right? So you literally will move to a space where that's all you see is God. And in the world, there's opposition that comes up and you deal with it, and that's fine. But you never lose sight of that peace. It just doesn't go away anymore. You're never tricked into believing, oh, that person's just a jerk and she's got it out for me and she doesn't love me and blah, blah, blah. Right? That may be true for her. That may be her story about you. But you've seen past all of that ridiculousness. So she could treat you however she wants to treat you. That's her choice. Or non-choice, as the case may be. That's her programming. All right. Why would you expect anything different? There was something Byron Katie said once that I've referred back to time and again, because it was another perfect moment. She was doing this was years ago I saw this. she was doing some kind of a workshop or something and talking to someone, then the person who was asking her the questions had experienced someone who was like yelling in their face, you know, I mean, like literally just yelling. And so Byron Katie looked at it and she says, well, what a beautiful thing. And of course, everybody's like, huh? This lady's crazy. She's like, what a beautiful thing. Look at how honest that is. Look at how honest it is. Did you ever look at that? It's honest. That's beautiful. How many people hide behind things and they aren't honest? You got brutal honesty. What a gift. Thank you. And then after, her point was, why would you expect anything different? Because the bottom line is, if you put yourself in that person's shoes, in that person's life circumstances, in that person's imprinting and patterning, if you could put yourself in that space, you would say the exact same thing to you. And even if you think you wouldn't, you're wrong, because you would. You can't expect someone to do anything different than they're programmed to do. She didn't say that. That's me. But that's what she was saying. She doesn't call it a program. That's why she gets a lot of people. And then I don't. The program's a little scary. But that is it. It is that. You know, you've got a planet full of programs and each one is looks a little different. And there are some who that are really, you know, from the aspect of how they make you feel, quote unquote, there are some people who are really hellacious people on the planet. Hellacious, you know. You got people who are, they're just bitter and nasty and ugly and, you know. And what I'm telling you is that you will even move into a space where you can be in the presence of that person and love them. Now, that may seem hard to fathom. When you get there, it's beautiful and you'll laugh. Like, I can't believe all those years. Like, I held all that crap against that person and it was completely unnecessary, you know. And now that I see this, it's like, huh, yeah, she's still wretched, but I don't care. It doesn't impact me anymore, right? She could say what she's going to say. That's fine. Of course she says that. It's all she knows to say. See, there's compassion in there. Can you see it? There's compassion there. Allowing the program to be the program without trying to change the program. You're not here to change the program. You're here to see through the program. That means see through it in everybody. It's not just you, right? Seeing through it, there's one program, and that one program shows up in everybody. So if you see through it here, you see through it everywhere. And it is attainable. I'm proof. I'm right here. It's attainable. What year is this? 2015? So like 9 years ago, I wasn't sitting here. 9 years ago, I was full of judgment. Had my own stories, just like you, no different. I was a victim. I wasn't the world's best victim, because that's Linda's job. Up until recently, she was the world's greatest victim. It's an honor. We made her a badge. See, and this is the beauty. I can tease like that because I know she doesn't take that personally. I wouldn't do that, you know. I wouldn't have done that 5 years ago. She never would have come back. None of it's personal. That's where all the laughter comes in. When you get past the point where it's personal, everything's just funny, you know. I laugh all the time. All the time. It's everything that happens. I mean, it doesn't happen. Like, something happened to me earlier. I'm not going to share what it was. But in the moment where it happened, I just laughed, you know. And then I looked at it and I was like, you know what? If that was anybody else, they'd be so angry right now. Like, they'd be so upset. And I'm just laughing. Like, well, of course it happened. You know. Okay. Move on. fix it, clean it up, do what you got to do, move on. It's over. So back to the, you know, so why am I so unorthodox? Well, just because that. Because the teachings, and it doesn't matter what system of teachings you, you know, are attracted to or whatever. Whatever it is, you know, it's perfectly placed for people who are in a certain level of consciousness, and they'll be attracted to it. But every system that's in place has its end point, you see. Every system has its end point. So there are paths where, you know, it's meant to get you to a certain place, but then when you've reached that place, it'll fall away. It'll fall away because maybe you'll have a change of jobs, which literally takes you away from it, or something will happen to the organization maybe and it falls apart, or you just move into a space where you have this like inner knowing that goes, you know, I think I'm done with that. And that's okay. Beautiful. It means it worked for you, you know? Yeah, honey, come on.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm great.
So I was thinking about that sign on the door over there that says, do not disturb.
Yeah.
And it really resonates with me because I feel like that's what I want in my day-to-day life. I don't want anyone to disturb me, you know, and they're disturbing me. And I was listening to what you were saying, and I thought to myself, it sounds like that's what we want deep down. Don't disturb me. Don't disturb my peace, whatever I have going on. And from what you've been saying, it seems like there's a state of mind you can get to where you can't be disturbed. So you move from do not disturb to cannot disturb. And I just wanted to see if that was, you know, proper thinking.
That's a good question. It's an excellent question. So I wouldn't call it a state of mind. It would be a state of non-mind, right? Because in the center of stillness, there's nothing that disturbs that. And that's true. But that doesn't mean that this is why you find me so confusing all the time. Because even in the space of someone who functions in the stillness, there are times where it's like, no, I can't be disturbed right now. Go. But see, the difference is that it's just something that moves. Let's say I have something I have to focus on and one of my kids comes in the room and I'm like, you know what? Not now. And I'll come find you when I'm done. Go. And that's it. It ends there. So there's no, I feel victimized that they just walked through my door. Poor me. They're always disturbing me, right? So that's the space you're dealing with. That falls away. And all it is just the recognition of, okay, this person needs this. This is what I'm doing. And in this moment, this one's going to take precedence. And I'll get to that one in a second. But maybe if I was working on something different, the work stops and I turn and I say, what do you need? Right? And it could be either equally. Could be either. Wouldn't matter. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it is very doable. It is very doable. Yeah. It's just where you function from. Because there just isn't, there's nothing in you anymore that wants to be angry. There's nothing in you anymore that wants to have a reason to be hateful. See, the personal self, it wants to be angry at the bottom of it all, right? Because it feels like it's been abandoned and it feels like it's been betrayed. And so even though it can recognize that what it desires is, kind of, you know, think about it like, you know, a little kid and his mom, right? A little kid and his mom. So it's built into the child to love his mother. It's built in. And so when mom doesn't treat the child appropriately and the child is hurt, he still wants to go back to mom. And anyone who has spent time with small children, you know that, what that looks like, because you literally could scream at a kid and have a kid start crying and he'll put his arms out to you. Pick me up, please. You know, like if you kick a puppy and it comes running back to you, it's that's what they're programmed to do. Mommy, mommy is security. Mommy is safety. Mommy is God. Yeah. So when the personal self really latched on through its experience, it latched on to, oh, Like, that's not available to me anymore. Now it just wants to be angry. See, because it doesn't believe it has a reason not to be angry. How many couples, you know, will have an argument that starts, see, they'll say a couple, they've been married 30 years. They have an argument that it starts over, you know, you ate the rest of the roast beef in the fridge. I was going to have a sandwich. And then 10 minutes later, they're arguing about something that happened on their honeymoon. Right? They want to hold on to the story. They want to revisit it to make the other person wrong. This is, when I say human love is predicated on behavior, there's a perfect example. They love each other, but yet the desire to be right and the desire to be seen as being better than or right when someone else is wrong, it supersedes the mind's capacity for love. It can't do it. And it completely constricts the heart. So in that moment, you know, you're angry because your husband ate the rest of the roast beef, and now you're going to throw something in his face that he already feels guilty about from 30 years ago. You know, I'm still angry that you never bought me a wedding present. You know, you're supposed to do that. There's supposed to be a groom's gift and a bride's gift, and I had my expectations up and you didn't get me anything. Thanks a lot. Right? He already feels like crap about that, by the way, from 30 years ago, the first time you brought it up. So I'm sorry. Why do we like to rub salt in people's wounds? Why? Because for that moment, you can feel justified. You know, for that one moment, you can get that, like, I'll stick it to you and it feels good. That's what it is. Drive the knife in a little deeper. That's where people live from. You know, it's sad. I tell you, you get to a certain point in this work, and I say it because I'm at that point. When I'm around people and I witness how people treat each other, it can bring me to tears. I find it terribly disturbing, terribly painful. It'll hurt my heart. Being around people who are just hateful to each other, especially when they're people who love each other, you know, because you can see it. You can see exactly what's going on. You can see two people who love each other, but because of the programming, they can't even see each other. That's something I have to bring to my students from time to time. When my students are down in it, sometimes I have to remind them, I see you. I see you. And what does that mean? It means I see you. When I look at you, I don't see your story. You may have told me all your stories. You may have struggled because you didn't want me to know your stories. You may have found that there were times you didn't want to say anything to me because you were afraid you were going to be nasty to me or you were going to do something that would be disrespectful or whatever. It doesn't matter, you know? I see God. That's all I see. I see God that's struggling to remember itself. Okay, I can help you with that. You know, it's not personal. And imagine when we can all do that. And when you reach a point where we can all do that, the rest of it falls away. No one's going to have to do that because it won't be there to do. You see, remember, you aren't here to change it. But when you see through it, it changes. It's just a natural occurrence. It changes. And so you recognize that along the path, you're going to go through many different stages. And hopefully you find a guide in person, you know, and they can be with you along the path and they will morph for you. And if you reach beyond their capacity, you're going to find someone else who can help you move that next bit. At the end of the day, what I wanted to say earlier was that it all has to fall away. I'm ushering in, and not just me, there are others in the world, but we're ushering in a whole new paradigm. We can guide you out of this illusion consciously, right? But we can't do it from within the concepts that everything else so far has been built out of. We're bringing in something completely new. And what that means is that even
what I'm going to bring you at some point has to fall away. The only difference is you're not going to have to go and find another guide when it's all done. Because there is no guide, ultimately. There is no teacher. None. And you'll see that for yourself. And at that point, you can be ready to be that for others. How are we doing, Pelion? You're a mess.
I had to find my unmute button. let's see. We've got like 30 seconds.
Do it quick. Okay, 30 seconds. Ooh, let's promo something. Oh, the biggest thing is September 22nd. The equinox is on the 23rd, but it's like 4 o'clock in the morning on the East Coast. So September 22nd, the awesome group, Azure Energy, is doing another global gathering. And basically between 7 and 9 p.m. Eastern time, wherever you are in the world. So however that translates to, you know, you'll be 7 to 9 wherever you are at night. They're going to hold just this 2-hour block where everybody's going to hold the space of loving equanimity for humanity and the planet. We always engage in that, and I always facilitate the actual meditation here in Charlotte. Please, you know, you can go to facebook.com/AYE Gatherings, and they have an event page there for it. Please go there, sign up, share it with your friends and family and people, other groups that you think would be interested. It doesn't have to be meditation. I mean, you can go out dancing, go sing, you know, make love with your partner for 2 hours, whatever it is. Be in your heart and ride that energy with everybody else. It's a beautiful thing and such an act of selfless service for the planet. So how's that for 30 seconds? That work? Very good. So we're going to go into meditation, and thank you so much for being with us again tonight. I love you all so very deeply. You have a wonderful night and rest of the week, and we will see you next week on Satsang. Thank you. Good night.
You are divine.